This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello and welcome to Lambwise, Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Lambwise based in Hastings. Lambwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at part two of Managing Herbicide Resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. Many of you will know Dan Bloomer, manager of Lambwise, and now PhD student, working on electric weed control of ryegrass and arable crops. Dan joins the podcast today to talk about his latest research into electric weeding, as well as comparisons to flame, steam, and abrasion weeding techniques. Thanks for coming on the podcast this morning, Dan.
Thank you, Georgia.
So do you want to start by, introducing the Ag Research Project and your role in the wider aim of managing herbicide resistance?
Yes, the project's quite a large one and it's covering all sorts of different things, and you've already talked to a few people about that, but it's looking at where is the current herbicide resistance in New Zealand, which species or situations, which environments we're most likely to see new resistance evolving. People are looking at finding genetic markers so that they can speed up resistance identification without having to grow plants for months to test them. And there's others looking at how farmers are perceiving and responding to and managing herbicide resistance. So that's bringing in people from Massey University, Lincoln University, Ag Research, and also people from overseas universities contributing in different ways. My part is investigating novel control technologies to control weeds without chemicals. And I think one of the key things that we need to always remember is we can't just replace chemicals with something else. We need to build these into new, what we call integrated weed management systems. So it's part of a whole package of things that we've got to have to use together.
Right, that makes total sense. So I guess I was surprised to see in your research that nearly half of the total pesticides used worldwide are herbicides. So since the 1940s, the uptake of herbicides has obviously been pretty significant. Now that these products are becoming less accepted by consumers and their effectiveness is being reduced with the rise of resistant genes in weeds, where do we go from here? Are we just going back to what we used to do in pre-1940s?
Some would say we are. So a lot of the alternative techniques for mechanical weeding and things aren't that different to what someone's been doing with a horse and a bent stick for a long, long time. So if we go and look at some of the new robotic systems, they're very smart machines that can find their way around, but they're still using old mechanical techniques. So in that sense, we are going backwards, but we're going frontwards in the way that we can sense the weeds. So there's a lot of technology that lets us actually use a camera to identify you're a crop plant, you're a weed, I'm going to target you. And I think that's where part of the future lies, using much more clever systems than we have in the past. But again, if you just look at that 40% of pesticides being herbicides, it's hard to know how to measure that sort of thing. Do you measure tons or effective lethal doses or all sorts of stuff? But certainly pesticides are very important in our current production systems, and herbicides are an important part of that. So if we look at the impact of weeds, if worldwide weeds are reducing crop production by around about 10 to 15% every year, and they can write off whole crops if you get it wrong. So it's important to know how to manage them. And then if you look at the herbicide resistance, it's hard to get real numbers on that, but there's been an estimate made that currently in the US, herbicide resistance, so not just weeds, but the increased cost of herbicide resistance, is around $4 to $6 billion US dollars a year for the United States. And if the chemistry keeps failing, they're saying it could be $100 billion a year of extra costs into the production system. So that's quite a lot of coin. And we want to have some way of addressing that issue. So, yeah, herbicides have been a really effective and efficient way to control weeds. And hopefully we can continue that way. But how do we extend their life as long as possible? But you're sort of thinking about consumer acceptance, and that's really important as well, because we're trying to sell, if we look at New Zealand, top value food to the most discerning, high-paying customers. I think we want to be a little bit careful about saying we're just not going to spray stuff. There's work by Jack Bobo released very recently, and he's saying that the full organic systems are something like 36% less productive than conventional agriculture. And if we were to convert all of our food production to organics, you'd end up having to chop into native forests and things like that to feed the current population. So, yes, there's downsides of chemistry, but there's downsides of not using chemistry, and the hard bits to weigh those up and work out where you put your values, I guess, to feed the world population.
So herbicides will definitely still maintain a place in an integrated weed management system. But what about comparing the different weeding technologies that we currently have? Is energy requirement a good way to, I guess, compare how effective and useful those technologies might be for different systems and different weed situations?
I think energy is a really critical one. So first of all, the technology has to be effective and actually control the weeds. The language, if you look at the research, people have talked about necessarily killing and controlling weeds and start now to talk about managing weeds. So Charles Murfield talks about having crop plants and weeds, and then there's some other plants which grow which aren't actually crop plants, but they're not reducing your yields and causing problems, so he calls them non-crop plants. But to Charles, a weed is something rather really negative and we need to control it, but these other plants, maybe we can live with those. So the way we think about weeds and non-crop plants is changing a little bit, and that's an ecosystem kind of way of thinking, which is important. But having looked at that, then yes, certainly the amount of energy is really important, because at the moment that energy comes from fossil fuels mostly. And so if we're using more fossil fuels to grow more food, then we need to balance that carbon side of things as well. So I spent a bit of time looking at that, and there's some nice work done by Guy Coleman and his colleagues at the University of Sydney, and a number of other workers have done work on the energy use of different systems as well. But when you look at that and the work that came out from there, Guy Coleman and his colleagues, they talk in megajoules per hectare of energy. And just about nobody apart from a scientist knows what that means. So I'll convert that through into the equivalent of litres of diesel per hectare, because I think most farmers understand litres of diesel per hectare for things. And I'd be interested in getting feedback from farmers if they think these numbers are right, because there's a whole range, right? So it depends a lot on the system that you're talking about. But if you look at the work from Sydney and the different systems they looked at, they did lots of maths and calculated out the energy use. And the light mechanical weeders, things, finger tines that just scrape the surface, and spot spraying, those would use between 0.1 and 0.5 of a litre a hectare. So a litre of diesel would get you 5 to 10 hectares of weeding done, which seems pretty light to me. If you look at the electric systems that are around at the moment, the calculations for those range quite a lot, but if it's working efficiently, maybe taking 1 to 2 litres a hectare. So that's not doing all of the weeds, that's just driving across a crop where there's some tall weeds and taking out just the tall weeds. So that's where the technology was developed originally. We perhaps talk about that later. So we've gone from maybe half a litre to 1 to 2 litres a hectare. And then if you look at ploughing or power harrows or repeated mowing of weeds, you move up again, and those and broadcast spraying come to maybe 5 to 20 litres a hectare. So a jump of an order of magnitude, so 10 times more energy. And then we start looking at the alternatives. And if we look at, say, hot water or hot foam or steam, we're getting up to maybe 200 litres of diesel a hectare, so 10 times more again. And then there's some work being done on microwaves. But with microwaves, depending on how you look at it, you might be up to 2,000 litres a hectare. And in my mind, you might as well just spray the weeds with diesel and try and kill them that way. So I think there are lots of different ways of killing weeds, dealing with weeds. The microwaves could kill seedlings or seeds as well, which would be attractive. But 2,000 litres of diesel, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, right. So electric weeding has been patented since the late 1800s and was commercialised for agriculture in the 1980s, as you were just mentioning before, with the first commercial electric weeder in ag that was killing the tall weeds off sugar beet crops. So why hasn't this weeding technology already taken off? What's the barriers that are stopping it from being adopted?
There are a few. The first one is that they're using 15,000 volts and massive big arcs, and there's a perception of danger. You can manage that danger if you want to, but there's a risk there and there's a perception there. They do use quite a lot of energy. So if you've got a 75 kilowatt generator sitting on the back of a tractor grinding along, zapping weeds, that's quite a lot of energy. But I think probably the most important thing is about the time they started coming onto the market, Roundup also came onto the market. And glyphosate's a very effective chemical, much cheaper, much easier to use, and perceived as a lot safer. So people get scared about 15,000 volts running through them, and they're not quite so scared about a bit of glyphosate. Though, as you've already mentioned, you know, the consumer perception might be the other way around, that they're worried about the glyphosate and don't mind about a farmer being exposed to 15,000 volts. So I think that's the main thing. The chemistry's just been so good and so effective that it's done the job much better, and it put people off thinking about electric systems. The thing with the electric stuff, though, is it's never really gone away. And when I got into my literature search for my study, you come across work coming out of Russia, the Soviet Union countries, and they've been working on this as well, and it seems they never stopped. So whether that's they had less access to some of the chemistry, or there were just some passionate people who had the resources to keep going on electric, I don't know. It's quite hard to look at their work because a lot of it's in Russian. A lot of it's not generally available online, so you find references to it in other people's work, or you find a little bit of abstract stuff. And when you do find their work in English, it's the translations are a wee bit challenging to understand. If you're trying to get to the real detail of what they've really done, and the English is a bit tricky, you're not quite sure if you're understanding what they've done. But certainly the work's carried on, and now with the resurgence and the herbicide resistance and the consumer desire to have less chemicals poured onto their food and into the system, there's been a resurgence in the electric weeding. And that's led largely out of the UK by work that Mike Diprose did in the late 70s and 80s, which is now sort of coming through in the next generation, and work done in Brazil and some work done in the States. So there are systems out there that people are using, and they are still effective, but they're still high energy. So that's where they're at.
So what progress have you made so far? What have you found out that's surprising or worth your while digging through all those Russian papers?
I suppose the first thing I did is I looked at other alternatives as well. So my brief was to compare alternative techniques, and some of them that were listed was hot water or hot foam and abrasion, so sandblasting plants and electric weeding. So we looked at hot foam, and we actually had a demonstration of that at the Landwise conference in 2019. And the thing you notice is it uses huge amounts of water. And so if you're trying to heat up hundreds of litres of water per hectare, that's a massive energy bill. And very tricky for me to see how you could do selective weeding when you're flooding the whole area with, you know, near boiling water. So it seems that you wouldn't take the weeds out of the crop, you might take the whole lot out. And the abrasion is quite interesting because Frank Forseller at the University of Minnesota has done quite a lot of work on that over the last 10 years or so. And AgResearch built a machine sort of to his specifications that I've been trying out. And Frank has access to corn grit, which is used for ear blasting in the States. It's just a waste product, and he's got heaps of it because he's in the corn belt. We looked at using sand. We looked at using macadamia shells, oyster shells, and various other grits we could lay our hands on. But we didn't manage to get very good control of ryegrasses. So I could bruise the plants and their leaves and put some dents in them and some holes in the leaves, but I found it quite hard to get it down into the growing points of the plant. So if you can't control those meristems, which are at ground level or below the ground, it's pretty hard to kill the plant out. So that's a bit tricky. So I'm still continuing to play with that, and there's another nozzle around that we want to try. But the other thing with it is if you're using compressed air, it takes a lot of energy to compress air. And so, again, the whole energy use per hectare gets to be pretty high. Frank and his students managed to show that you could selectively control weeds and grasses out of maize if you did it just right. So you had to get it when the maize was just the right size, and you had to go through twice to get good control. But so there's potential there, but I think a little bit tricky. So that left me looking at the electric weeders, and there kind of aren't any in New Zealand except for one that was brought in to more for parks and reserves. And so if you don't want to spray Roundup in Auckland Domain, you could potentially use an electric weeder. Then you have somebody with a generator and big danger, high voltage electricity signs, and so it's probably a little bit challenging for some of the public as well, but the desirability of getting rid of chemicals out of public areas is high. But when we looked at that system, again, it's really hard to see how you could use that in a full paddock sense. It's a very energy hungry system. So that sort of got us to the stage with, well, those aren't looking that good. What could I do instead? And in the literature, I discovered some Japanese work from 1990. Where they had found that they could kill little weeds with very, very small amounts of energy if they used very high voltage but very low shocks. So I started to investigate that, and by serendipity, by a bit of good luck, I bounced into a group of Massey University engineering students who were also playing around with that and trying to do some electric weeding using little shocks. So had a chat to them, and then they graduated and went their various ways. But one of them, Hamish, set up his own company, and he's trying to make commercial weeding equipment. So we've kind of partnered up for him to make equipment, and I'm using his machinery to do my research on electric weeding. And so he's the engineer looking at electronics, and I'm the agronomist come plant science person trying to understand how that works. So in terms of progress there, what have I found out so far? We've gone into the greenhouse and we've grown fathen, and we've grown ryegrass, and we've tried giving them electric shocks, and we've shown that we can kill fathen seedlings, not all the time, but two-thirds of the time or half the time, depending how we do it, with electric shocks. So I'd say that's proof of concept. There's something rather working, but I need to find out exactly why it's working or why it doesn't always work, and then we can do that better. And with the ryegrass, it's been quite interesting because sometimes we've been able to kill the plants, but even when we haven't killed them, we've been able to slow their growth down for a while. So if we can slow their growth down for a few weeks and the crop takes off in the meantime, maybe the crop then swamps that plant, the weeds out, and we can carry on.
Right, so more managing weeds than just outright killing them for the fun of it.
Yeah, well, ideally we'd kill them, especially if they're resistant to herbicides, because we don't want them to set seed and carry on next time around.
Yeah.
But if we can't, we can slow them down and reduce the population and have them set less seed.
And avoid spraying as well.
And avoid spraying. But that comes back to that integrated weed management thing. So maybe next year we don't grow something, and we don't grow another arable crop that's going to have grasses in it. We do something where we can control those weeds, either mechanically by planting something at a different time of year, or a crop where we've got some other options to kill the weeds. So we don't want to look at it, I've got this crop, I must control every single weed in here. We need to start looking at which crops we grow in which order, which successions, what's giving us a chance to attack the weeds. Which is kind of what we did in medieval times when we invented rotational cropping, and that was partly around disease management, but it also gives you different chances to kill the weeds. So we need to be a bit cleverer. Since the 1950s, we've been able to be a bit lazy because chemistry's been so good. But now we have to think about the whole rotation, the whole system, and how we attack things on a systems basis.
Great. So what are some of the unknowns that you need to resolve over the next few years of your PhD?
We know that we can kill some weeds sometimes. We don't know why we can't kill them all the time. So we're looking at what's the dose that they need. If you think in chemical terms, what's a lethal dose for 95% of plants or something like that? And how do you actually measure that dose? So is it the voltage that's important, or the length of time, or the energy, or what's actually needed to control the plants? And to understand how to minimise the energy, we want to do that most efficiently. And we want to know why the weed's actually dying. So the big high-energy systems, what they do is they put so much electricity through the plant that the resistance in the plant causes heating, just like an electric heater, and the plant boils itself to death from the inside out. But the amount of energy that we're using in some of these other systems isn't enough to boil the plant, so we're wondering what else is going on. So we want to look into what's the physiology behind the damage that we're doing, and what's causing the plant to die. And how would we optimise that system to make it even more effective? And then the last piece of it, I guess, is, well, how do we fit that into a practical system? So at the moment, we're doing one plant at a time standing in a lab. We've done a little bit of work now in the paddock, and we're seeing that we can sometimes kill weeds in the paddock, so that makes me feel a lot better. But the ideal system would be to fit this in with a system where the vision system sees the crop and the weeds, targets the weed, directs the thing with a robotic system towards it. So a lot of people are doing work on micro robots or very small robots where you take not one big tractor but 20 little robots and let them loose in a paddock, and they find their way around. They identify the weeds, they target the weed, and they zap it with a bit of electricity. That would be my dream. And if we can do it with really low energy, they could be solar powered robots. We'd probably use more energy in the computer working out what's a weed and where the robot should go than we'd actually use killing the weed.
That would definitely be a different sight looking around farms. Well, thanks for joining me today, Dan. It's been great to have your perspective on the managing herbicide resistance topic and hear about some of the research that you've been doing to compare and assess novel weeding technologies. The Lambwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.